And we are on air for Fanfare Racing Radio. This is Thursday, April the 18th, and we are here to talk about our Talladega NASCAR Weekend Preview and Hot Topics Sound Off. Joining me for today's show is our co-host, Brian Eberle. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. Happy Thursday. How's it going?
It's going great. Just one little thing before we get into our agenda. Happy birthday, Brian.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I feel like the word's gotten out everywhere. Everyone seems to know. So I appreciate that. Thanks. And, yeah, having a pretty solid day. Fun weekend ahead.
Yes, indeed. Definitely looking forward to it. And I want to also do a shout-out happy birthday to Sal Sagala. You guys share the same birthday. Did you know that?
That's right. I feel like every year I do remember that. I feel like every year that comes up. I'm like, it's kind of interesting. It's cool.
It is very cool. All right. With that, we are going to get into our Talladega NASCAR Weekend Preview. We're going to start with some short track news and upcoming races. And then we're going to preview the Arca Menards Series at Talladega. They're back on track this weekend and on the big stage with the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series. And afterward, we'll also preview the Arca West Series race that's taking place at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway this weekend. And then we'll also make sure that you know when the next race is going to be for the Arca East. Afterward, we'll give you some updates on the NASCAR Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend, but we'll make sure you know what's going on there. And then afterward, we'll preview the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the Cup Series races at Talladega Super Speedway. And we'll end the episode as we usually do, and that's with our Hot Topic Sound Off conversation with our Fanfare Racing crew. I think Andy may or may not be joining us. I'm not 100% sure yet.
Sounds good.
Okay. So with that, let's go ahead and get into our short track news here. I'm going to do some work here I'm kind of setting up my computer here, I think. And... Okay, I think we've got it now.
All righty.
Okay.
You want me to kick off the first section?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and start with the first section here?
Yeah, sounds good. So, yeah, we got a little bit of dirt action going on here this past week and coming up again this weekend. The High Limit Series, owned by Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet, of course, is kind of getting into high gear with their series. They've had a little bit of a break here in the early part of the season, but they ran red dirt on Tuesday night. Corey Day, 18-year-old out of California, got the win there. Big win for him. Definitely making his name very well known in the dirt world here in the early starts of this season. So good to see there. And they are slated to run a doubleheader this weekend at two different tracks, starting with Southern Oklahoma Speedway on Friday night and then the Salina High Banks Speedway on Saturday, and then they'll run again on Tuesday night next week at Riverside International Speedway, and that'll be the second race in what they call the midweek money series. So that runs usually, I think, Monday and Tuesday nights throughout the season. Obviously, that'll give Larson and maybe some other Cup guys a chance to run in those races as well. So pretty exciting to see. That'll coverage will be on Flow Racing when that series does run. So always exciting, and I love watching sprint cars whenever I get the chance.
Okay, absolutely. Definitely looking forward to those races. On the short track side of things, so we've got the Pro All-Star Series. They're going to miss one Sunday. Eddie McDonald scored another victory at New Hampshire Motor Speedway in the Northeast Classic. Jeff Brown writes about that over at Short Track Scene, and you can read all about it there. But there's also the Cars Tour is returning to Orange County Speedway this weekend, and the entry list is available for that race over at Flow Racing as well as Short Track Scene. And then Rob Blount at Flow Racing talks about Bowman Gray is back starting this weekend, and he gives you everything you need to know about what's going on at the Bowman Gray Stadium this weekend as they get started with their season. Also, the Oxford Plains Speedway opening day was postponed. That's because the grounds were saturated. Racing America gave us that information, and you can check that out. And be sure to watch the ROC Modifieds at Mahoning, Valley and Slinger, and Nashville. All those races are taking place this weekend, and you can read about it over at Racing America. You want to talk about what's going on at Kern County Raceway along with the Xfinity and Cup Series this weekend?
Yeah, sure. So we've got Kevin Harvick's now Kern Raceway slated for some action with the Spears Pro Late Model Series. That'll be running this weekend. Got some little bit of practice, it looks like, on Friday night. And then Saturday, a bunch of practice for those series, qualifying, and then a great slate of main events going on there. And this will be the first year that they've kind of renamed this at Kevin in honor of Kevin Harvick. So that's pretty cool to see, and looking forward to seeing that get kicked off this weekend.
And then there's a couple of articles also up that give you an idea of some of the drivers that will be racing this weekend. Seth Wise has set his sights on a Kern victory this weekend, so we'll see if that happens. But you can learn more about Seth over at the SRL Southwest Tour website. And then also Ryan Martin is making his debut with the 2023 Spears Pro Late Model Champ at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway this weekend. Almost got caught up in the old name there. Huh?
Yeah. It's hard to get used to saying that.
It is. I know Sal Segala is going to be there this weekend, so if you do see him out at the racetrack this weekend, Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway, make sure you give him a shout-out and wish him a happy birthday as well. So definitely looking forward to seeing if he's able to get one of those drivers on our show for Monday night. So with that, I know we're a couple minutes ahead of time here, Brian, but let's go ahead and get into our preview now for the ARCA Menards Series. They're going to be racing the General Tire 200 at Talladega Super Speedway this weekend. That will be on Saturday, April the 20th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. That's the 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Live coverage will be on Fox Sports 1 as well as MRN Radio. They'll race a distance of 200 miles over 74 laps, so definitely looking forward to the ARCA Menards Series being back on track this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree. It's been quite some time, I feel like, since we've seen them. They obviously get the season kicked off with Daytona and Phoenix early on, and then there's kind of a pretty big gap in the schedule, and they're running the third race of their season this weekend at Talladega. So that's pretty cool. There's actually been 17 consecutive ARCA races at Talladega without a repeat winner. So the last driver to repeat, guy that feel like he dominated all the time back in the day, was Frank Kimmel, who won at Talladega in both 2006 and 2013. And we got some drivers here kind of making some starts this weekend that maybe we haven't seen in a bit. Frankie Muniz coming back, running his first race of the season in the number 34. He finished ninth at Talladega last year. Gus Dean, who won the season opener at Daytona, he also won at Talladega in 2016, and he's actually the only previous winner in the field this weekend. So a host of drivers looking to go to victory lane at Talladega.
Okay, I'm kind of lost here on where you're at on our notes, but I'm going to kind of go with the flow here, I guess. The General Tire 200, as you mentioned, is the third of 20 races for this series. The 62nd race at Talladega Super Speedway and the 1,556th race in series history. But we do have some previous ARCA Menards Series winners at Talladega, and there's quite a few on that list. Do you want to cover that, Brian? It's over on the teams page. Brian?
Oh, sorry about that. I'm still on mute, and I didn't even realize it. I didn't think I'd
normally
don't pull my phone anymore, but I'm battling some early season allergies here, and I didn't want to cough into the phone while you were talking. So anyway, sorry about that.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, I'm going to run through that list of names. We got Jim Vandiver, who won it in 1969 and 1975, Ramo Staat, Johnny Hulford, Ron Hutchinson, Bruce Hill, Sandy Stelluo, Billy Harvey, Mark Martin won in 1981, Jimmy Vaughn, Rick Rowland, Davey Allison, who's won it in 83 twice, 84 and 85, Red Farmer, a name we all know, Philip, Greg Adcox, Tracy Leslie, Jimmy Horton, Charlie Glotzbach, Tim Steele, Jeff Purvis, Mike Wallace, Bob Strait, David Keith, Bobby Gerhart, Keith Seegers, Paul Menard back in 2003, Blake Fees, Craig Kinzer, Frank Kimmel, as I mentioned already, Michael Annette, Justin Allgaier, obviously getting it done all the time in the Xfinity Series these days, Justin Lofton, Dakota Armstrong, Ty Dillon, Brandon McReynolds, Tom Hessert, miss him running ARCA all the time for sure, Blake Jones, Gus Dean, and then we got some names that we're all familiar with up in the upper series these days, Justin Haley, Zane Smith, Todd Gilliland, Drew Dollar, Corey Heim, Nick Sanchez, and last but not least, Jesse Love. So quite the list of previous ARCA Menard Series winners at Talladega Super Speedway.
Absolutely. And speaking of Frank Kimmel, he's the winningest driver in the ARCA Menard Series. And in 17 consecutive races at Talladega, there has not been a repeat winner. The last driver to do it was Frank Kimmel, who won in 2006 and again in 2013. So pretty cool to see that. And then 19 drivers have earned their first ARCA Menard Series victory at Talladega. And we've got another long list here, Brian.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of those same guys that we just mentioned and drivers, Jim Vandiver, Johnny Hulford, Bruce Hill, Sandy Stelluo, Billy Harvey, Mark Martin, Jimmy Vaughn, Rick Rowland, Davey Allison, Tim Steele, Keith Seegers, Paul Menard, Craig Kinzer, Michael Annette, Dakota Armstrong, Brandon McReynolds, Blake Jones, Gus Dean, and Drew Dollar. And for a host of those drivers, Halford Hill, Stelluo, Martin, Vaughn, Rowland, Seegers, Menards, Kinzer, McReynolds, Jones, and Dollar. It was their only career series win in the ARCA Menard Series. Kind of crazy that some of those guys only have the one win just because they're so well-known at the upper levels these days. And as I mentioned before, Gus Dean will be back this weekend running his first race since the season opener at Daytona, the only previous Talladega winner in the series. And Thomas, I'm going to butcher the last name here, but Anunziata, who finished second at Daytona in his series debut, will be making his second start at Talladega. And he'll return to the cockpit of that Jeff McClure-owned number 44 Chevrolet.
Okay. And then also, Greg Van Alt is going to be returning to Talladega for the first time since being injured. There was a crash in the Craftsman Truck Series race at the track last fall. And Van Alt, who won the Daytona in 23, finished third in the 24 season opener. Now leads the series standings by 5 points over Christian Rose. I don't know why I said Chastain there, but Christian Rose. Both of those drivers have been guests here on Fan for Racing Radio, and we wish them luck this weekend.
And another driver we've always heard of, very popular last year, coming over, Malcolm in the Middle star Frankie Munoz, running again this weekend, finished ninth last year at Talladega. And then Tim Richmond will make his second start of the year, his first since he started on the front row and earned a career-best fifth-place finish in the season opener at Daytona. Starting positions 1 through 36 will be set actually via the final 2023 ARCA Menard Series owner points, and positions 37 through 40, if needed, will be set by practice speeds. So there will be no qualifying session for the ARCA Menard Series this weekend at Talladega, only practice and the race. But talking of qualifying, two-time ARCA Menard Series champion Bill Venerini holds the track qualifying record set back in 1987 at 205.432 miles an hour. Unfortunately, they don't allow him to even run that fast anymore, but that's quite the qualifying record. The race record was actually set by Drew Dollar back in 2020, 1 hour, 11 minutes, 22 seconds, average miles per hour of 169.962. Must have been a few caution, very few caution race back in 2020.
All right, some more logistics here. The race is going to be run under the modified live pit stop format, so every caution is going to be a chance to pit. And drivers who do choose to pit will realign behind the drivers who do not elect to pit. In the order in which they entered pit road in the following order. Lead lap cars that did not make a pit stop and lead lap cars that made a pit stop on their scheduled lap. Lap cars that did not make a pit stop and lap cars that made a pit stop. So the free pass recipient, wave around cars, and cars under penalty is the order in which those drivers will be lined up. A team can change tires and add fuel on the same pit stop, but not at the same time. Tires can be changed under green only if damaged and approved by an official, and fuel is not to be added under green flag conditions. So, again, just some logistics of what to expect. And then the record for the most lead changes in the ARCA Menards Series race at Talladega is at 23. That was set back in May. And the race was actually won by Davey Allison. There's a name we haven't heard in a while, but I like that name. And the record for the most cautions in an ARCA Menards Series race at Talladega is 9 for a record 56 laps that was set in 2000 in a race that was won by David Keith. The fewest cautions in an ARCA Menards Series race at Talladega is set at 1. In 2014 and tied again in 2020. The fewest caution laps was 2, and that was in 2020.
And the record for the closest finish in ARCA Menards Series history set back in 2018 between Zane Smith and Gerald Graff Jr. in what they term a statistical dead heat. The scoring monitor read a 0.0000 second margin of victory, and the race was actually decided by video replay, giving that win to Zane Smith over Joe Graff. And just another kind of logistics note, as the ARCA Menards Series overtime rules differ slightly from the Cup Xfinity and Truck Series, if the race needs to go into overtime, there will be just one attempt at a one lap of what they call a green and white together finish. Should the caution come out any time on that final lap before the field gets the checkered flag, the field will be frozen and the race will be over. So one thing to note there is it comes down to the final laps of the ARCA race, just a little bit different than what we see in some of the other NASCAR series.
Yes, indeed. Also, just a reminder that ARCARacing.com usually has live coverage available for these races as well. And then if you kind of want to get to know some of the, exactly who's on the entry list, they have the entry list for both the General Tire 200 at Talladega as well as the MMI Oil Workers 150 at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway available over at ArcaRacing.com as well. So now we're going to move on to that ARCA West Series race, the MMI Oil Workers 150 presented by the West Coast Dakar Motorsports Hall of Fame, again at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway out in Bakersfield, California, his hometown. That race is also on Saturday, April the 20th, but it's at 11:15 p.m. Eastern Time. And that would equate to 8:15 p.m. Pacific Time. It is going to be available for live streaming over at Flow Racing. They will race 75 miles over 150 laps. So we'll go ahead and get started with this series.
Yeah, you're going to have to get the coffee on if you're going to stay up for, at least if I'm going to stay up for that one. I can't stay up that late anymore, but definitely late green flag. But that race will be the second race in the round of 12 races that makes up the 2024 schedule for the ARCA Menards Series West, the 14th race for the West Series at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway, and the 1,018th race in West Series history. A host of ARCA Menards Series West winners at Kern Raceway in the past include Greg Pursley in 2013 and 2014, Dylan Lupton in 2014, Dalton Sargent in 2015, Todd Gilliland in 2016 and 2017. Current Truck Series driver Derek Krause has a host of wins at Kern Raceway in 2017, 2018, twice, and 2019. Caleb Gray also ran the Truck Series 1 in 2020, Landon Lewis in 2022, and Sean Hingarani in 2023. Sargent, Krause, Gray, and Landon Lewis all scored their first West victory at the track, and for Sargent, it was his only win in the ARCA West Series.
All right. There's also 10 different drivers that have earned at least one pole award at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. They include Greg Galding, Greg Pursley, Dalton Sargent, Todd Gilliland, Kevin Harvick, of course, Haley Deegan, Derek Krause, Jesse Love, PJ Pedroncelli, and Landon Lewis. The 2024 ARCA Menard Series West season opened with a combination race with the ARCA Menard Series at Phoenix Raceway. And just to give everybody kind of a reminder of how that went down, William Sawalich won, and Gio Ruggiero, Grant Infinger, Connor Mosack, and the reigning series champion, Sean Hingarani, rounded out the rest of those top five finishers. So some of you who have been with us for a while know that Mason Mitchell was a ARCA Menard Series national champion in 2014 and will return to the ARCA platform for the first time since he finished seventh at Iowa Speedway in 2018. He's going to be racing the number 23 Chevrolet for team owner Joe Fari, and what will be his first career West start. Another former ARCA Menard Series national champion, Grant Infinger, drove the 23 car to a third-place finish in the West opener at Phoenix. So it's going to be fun to see Mason Mitchell behind the wheel of that car this week, and I hope he does well out in the West.
Yeah, that's a really cool name that I've known for a while and covered Mason a lot back when I was at the track for ARCA very regularly in those years. So really cool to see him racing this weekend. He's going to race in the ARCA race at Iowa Speedway as well this year. It's the two ARCA races on his schedule. And then he's been running some local stuff out in Iowa as well last season and again this season. So cool to see him still turning some laps, and love to see it.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll get into a little bit of kind of caution flags and qualifying records and things here when it comes to Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. The record for cautions in an ARCA West race at the track, 8, set in May 2014 and also in August 2014 and April 2016. Most laps under caution, 43, set in 2015. The fewest caution flags they've actually had there is 3. That happened in both 22 and 2023, and they only ran 12 laps under caution in 2022, so a fairly clean race there. Track qualifying records held by Greg Galding, who's been in the news lately for not-so-great things, back in 2013, at 17.908 seconds. The West track race record is held by Derek Krause, set in 2019, at a very quick 1 hour, 4 minutes, and 6 seconds. And should that race need to be extended into overtime at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway on Saturday night, there will actually be unlimited attempts at a 2-lap green-white checkered finish. And should the caution flag come out after the white flag is displayed, there will be unlimited attempts at a 1-lap green and white together finish. So different than the Super Speedway rules for ARCA at Talladega this weekend.
Okay. I'm just kind of perusing the entry list for both of these races in the ARCA Menard Series and just kind of want to go real quick down that entry list. For the race at Talladega, we've got some new names, but some local drivers. Ben Peterson from Birmingham, Alabama, will be driving the zero car for Wayne Peterson. Andreas Perez will be in the number 2 car for Rev Racing. Then you've got LeVar Scott, another Max Eagle car or Rev Racing entry. Eric Caudell in the number 7. Sean Kaur will be in their family-owned team car, the number 8. Ed Pompa will be driving an Andy Hillenburg entry, the number 10. Another Hillenburg entry is Bryce Hogeberg, as well as Ryan Roulette. Bryce will be in the number 11, and Ryan will be in the number 12. Chris Wright will be driving the number 15 for Venturini Motorsports. Then you've got Joe Gibbs Racing, Tanner Gray in the number 18. Jake Ench will be driving the number 20 Venturini entry. Amber Balkan, the number 22 for Venturini, and Tony Breidinger in the number 25 for Venturini. Then we go to Tim Richmond driving for his family-owned team, the number 27. I'm not sure who the Rhett Jones entry is. Do you know who that is, Brian?
Number 30? In the Rhett Jones. Oh, yeah, that'll be Frankie Muniz.
Okay, I had a feeling it might be him. Casey Carden in the number 31 for Tim Goulet. Christian Rose in the number 32 for the Kevin Sawinski entry. Greg Van Alt in the number, his number 35 for his family's team. Thomas Annunziata in the number 44. Brad Smith in the number 48. Gus Dean, we mentioned, in the number 55 for Billy Venturini. Hunter Duchotel, I'm not sure that I pronounced that very well, the number 57 entry for Brian Duzak. Jeff Schofield in the number 68, two Bill Kimmel entries here in the number 69 is Scott Melton. Andy Jakowiak in the number 17, and that's for the Lampier entry. Chuck Buchanan driving for his race team in the number 87. A.J. Moyer in the number 88 for Petro Nero. Caleb Costner in the number 93 for their family-owned team. Jason Kitzmiller will be in the Cody Robaugh number 97. Dale Shearer driving for his team in the number 98. Michael Maples in the 99 for Hillenburg, along with Cody Dennison in the 01 for the Hillenburg entry. Alex Club will be driving for his team in the 03. And Khan Nikopoulos for the Wayne Peterson number 06 entry. Do you want to cover the West entry list, Brian?
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. So we've got a pretty solid entry list of 24 drivers for Saturday night's action, starting out with Tony Huffman in the number 0 car for Bobby Hillis Jr., a trio of drivers from California, Robbie Keneally in the number 1, Todd Souza in the number 3, and Eric Nascimento in the number 4. Got Cole Raz in the number 5 Toyota for Jerry Pitts, along with his Pitts teammate in the number 7 Takuma Koga. Danica Dart driving the number 11 Chevrolet for Harley Keneally. Kyle Keller in the number 12 for his, I assume, family-owned team, Fran Keneally. And a Ford, also hailing from California. We've got Tyler Reif in the number 13 from Henderson, Nevada. And I got a pair of Bill McAnally entries here, always the class of the Westfield typically. Number 16, Jack Wood out of Loomis, California. And number 19, Eric Johnson Jr. In the number 21 car, we've got Henry Barton. As we mentioned already, Mason Mitchell will be behind the wheel of the number 23 Chevrolet. Joe Ferrey in the number 24 Chevrolet. Bobby Hillis Jr. for his team in the number 27 car out of Phoenix, Arizona. PJ Pedroncelli from Sonoma, California in the number 33 Chevrolet. John Bornham in the third in the number 41. Trevor Huddleston in the number 50. Ryan Philpott in the number 52. And Shane Hingarani in the number 61 Toyota for Hattori Racing. And wrapping up the entry list here, another driver out of California in the number 71, Nick Joannis. Garrett Zacharias in the number 77 Toyota. Number 88, driven by John Moore out of Granite Bay, California. And last but not least, in the number 05, David Smith from Sydney, British Columbia. So that kind of wraps up the 24-car entry list. Pretty solid field for Saturday night's action with coverage on Flow Racing.
Absolutely. All right. Next up, we'll give you a few updates here from the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. Their next race is going to be at Kansas Speedway on Saturday, May the 4th, the Heart of America 200. It should start around 8 p.m. Eastern time with pre-race coverage on Fox Sports 1 starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Then we've got radio coverage also available on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. I apologize for my phone ringing here. So they'll be racing a distance of 201 miles over 134 laps, stage one, and stage two are 30 laps apiece, and then the final stage always ends on the last lap. So that's lap 134. So with that, let's go ahead and see what awaits us at Kansas Speedway, Brian.
Yeah, so a couple weeks off for the truck series before they headed on down to Kansas. Taking a look ahead at that, only three previous winners are currently on the entry list for that race coming up in a couple of weeks. Kind of the biggest name in the truck series this year, the most success, Christian Eckes, in that number 19 McAnally Hilgeman Racing Chevrolet, is only one of the handful of drivers that have consistently run in the top 10 week after week, aside from that brake failure he had in Atlanta and finished 32nd. And he's got a pretty stout record at Kansas as well, has one win in the fall of 2023, with four top fives and six top tens, and the 23-year-old driver is the most recent winner at Kansas. So I'm guessing when we talk about the betting odds in a couple weeks, I guess he'll be near the top of that list. Series veteran and the longest time driver in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series currently, Matt Crafton, who owns a plethora of records at Kansas Speedway. The race record set in 2015, most races run at Kansas with 27, most wins with three, most top fives with seven, most top tens with 14, and he's completed a whopping 4,148 laps at Kansas. The driver of the number 88 Thor Sport Ford last won at Kansas back in the spring of 2020 and finished 11th in the spring Kansas race last year. And last but not least, on a trio of drivers to look forward to at Kansas, that's none other than veteran driver Grant Enfinger in the number 9 CR7 Chevrolet, yet to record a top five this season, but that could change at Kansas. In 11 starts, he has one win, which came in the spring race in 2023. Six top fives, eight top tens, and has led 132 laps. I was at the spring race last year when Enfinger went to victory lane, so always run really well there, and another driver to watch out for here in a couple weeks at Kansas.
Okay, I'm totally lost. You lost me completely. So why don't you take the rest of the truck series, because I have no idea where you were.
Oh, no worries. Just right below in the notes where the truck series goes. Chevrolet dominated early in the 2024 season, but Toyota has been the ruler at Kansas. Chevy has won six of the seven races so far this season. The last non-Chevrolet to win was actually the number 11 Tricon Garage Toyota by Corey Heim at Circuit of the Americas. But when it comes to Kansas, it's Toyota. They've won a plethora of races there, starting in 2005 with Todd Bodine. They've also gone to victory lane in 2009 with Mike Skinner, 2013 with Crafton, 2014 with Kyle Busch, again with Crafton in 2015, William Byron in 2016, Kyle Busch again in 2017, Noah Gregson in 2018, Austin Hill in 2020, Kyle Busch in 2021, and John Hunter Nemechek in 2022. Chevrolet does have 10 wins at the track after winning the last two races at Kansas, and Ford has six wins. Toyota drivers will look to earn their second victory of 2024 here in a couple of weeks. Current Truck Series standing leader is Christian Eckes. He is now leader after his fourth place finish at Texas Motor Speedway. Just the third time he's led the point standing through seven races there, four drivers from three organizations that have led the standings so far this season: Tyler Ankrum, Ty Majeski, Corey Heim, and now Eckes. We've had some good parity at the top of the Truck Series standings. Eckes is currently just 2 points ahead of Corey Heim and 12 points ahead of Thor Sport Racing's Ty Majeski in third. Eckes will look to hold on to the standing lead at Kansas, and he has eight Truck Series starts with one win, four top fives, and six top tens, and is the most recent winner, as we mentioned, in the Truck Series at Kansas. A couple of little Truck Series notes that have come out here in the past week. Jeffrey Earnhardt is actually going to make his return to the Truck Series at Charlotte Motor Speedway coming up there at the end of May. That'll be the first time he's run a Truck Series race since the 2011 season, and he'll actually join MBM Motorsports. Earnhardt, of course, has had a lot of Xfinity Series starts in recent years, making 169 starts in that series with two top fives and six top tens. Finished eighth at Atlanta back in February, his only Xfinity start so far this season. And when it comes to the Truck Series, He has just 10 starts with a top 10 finish driving for Rick Ware Racing back in the 2011 Truck Series opener that season at Daytona. And the last note when it comes to the Truck Series, just a quick look at the rookie standings as we head to Kansas in a couple of weeks. Lane Riggs leads that with 106 points, followed by Connor Jones with 68 and Thad Moffitt with 55. And that wraps up our Truck Series notes. As I mentioned, no action for them at Talladega this weekend, just the Xfinity and the Cup Series.
All right. Let's go ahead and get into our update for the fantasy picks for this weekend, since we have a little bit of time here. I'm going to go ahead and go to, my page isn't here. Okay, let's start with the Xfinity Series and the box data for the Xfinity Series. We've got three drivers that are at the top of that list. A.J. Allmendinger tops the list at 107.4. He's got an average finish of 2.0, which is pretty impressive. Austin Hill just below him at 104.3, but his average finish is 19.7 in three races. Allmendinger's is based on two. And also based on three races is Sheldon Creed with 101.6 box score, and his average finish is at 12.7. Some other drivers that I just want to point out that have really good average finishes, even though they don't have necessarily good box scores, and that is Parker Kligerman has an average finish at 4.5. Then Parker Retzlaff, one of the drivers that has really been doing well, I think, in the Xfinity Series, has an average finish at 7.0. Cole Custer's average finish at the track is at a 4.0. And Brennan Poole, just one race on his resume, but he has an average finish of 5.0. So those are some drivers that you might want to consider as maybe dark horse picks for this weekend, in some cases at least. What do they tell us at DraftKings, Brian?
Great question. So, yeah, probably no surprise if you watch the Xfinity Series in the last couple of seasons, but Austin Hill comes in as the heavy favorite at 4-1 odds to go to victory lane. And then we've got A.J. Allmendinger at second with 10-1 odds. And then a host of drivers here at 12-1. Sheldon Creed, Riley Herbst, Justin Allgaier, and Jesse Love. Ryan Truex making a start this week with Joe Gibbs Racing at 14-1, along with Chandler Smith at 14-1. Am Mayer and Cole Custer are back at 15-1. Parker Kligerman at 16-1. Taylor Gray at 18-1, and a couple drivers, Sammy Smith and Brandon Jones at 20-1. And as we know, when it kind of comes to a place like Talladega, literally anyone can pretty much go to victory lane. So betting on some of those guys with some of the heavier odds could lead to a hefty payday if you are that risky. I tend to just shy away from betting Talladega in most cases and playing a lot of DraftKings lineups just because it is so difficult to predict and literally anything can happen. But those are kind of the odds this weekend. I like Austin Hill. I think it's hard to bet against him when it comes to the super speedway races in the Xfinity Series.
Yeah, that is so true. And, you know, you're right. That's one of the reasons they call these super speedway races the wild card races, because it's next to impossible to actually pick. And although stats sometimes help, they're not always the answer when it comes to the super speedways. But Ryan Blaney tops the list for the NASCAR Cup Series. He's the only one who has a driver rating over 100, and it's just barely over 100 for all of the reasons that we just outlined. He's at a 100.9 box score or driver rating. His average finish at the track comes in at a 4.0. And only two other drivers have an average finish that is under 10, and that is Chase Elliott at 7.0 and William Byron at 9.3. All of those are possibly good picks for Talladega, but anything and everything can happen, as Brian mentioned earlier. So what do they tell us at DraftKings?
All right, so typically, as you see, no heavy favorite here by any means when it comes to the Cup Series. We've got a trio of drivers listed as the favorite with William Byron, Ryan Blaney, and Brad Keselowski, all three of those at 10-1. And then another trio of drivers at 11-1 with Joey Logano, Denny Hamlin, and Chase Elliott, who just got his monkey off the back last week with that victory. So any of those six drivers definitely could win and are always much talked about when it comes to Daytona and Talladega. We've got both Kyle Busch and Bubba Wallace at 15-1, Ross Chastain and Christopher Bell together at 16-1. Very rare that you see Kyle Larson this far down the list, but Super Speedways have never been his cup of tea. He's at 18-1. RFK teammate to Keselowski, Chris Buescher at 19-1. Ty Gibbs at 20-1. The guy I like, Tyler Reddick at 22-1. Obviously, the Toyotas all draft really well together. I could see him having a good race this weekend if he can avoid that carnage. Alex Bowman and Martin Truex Jr. also both at 22-1 as well. And we've got Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at 28-1 and Eric Jones back there at 30-1, along with Austin Dillon and Austin Cindric. So Austin Cindric, of course, has that win at Daytona a couple years ago, 30-1 odds. I kind of like that. Michael McDowell, who's also been to victory lane, he's back there at 40-1 odds. So got some hefty paydays for a couple of drivers there potentially that have gone to victory lane at Daytona in the past, or at Daytona and Talladega in the past.
All right. With that, we'll go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series. And so that I can kind of stay on track of where we are, Brian, I'd appreciate it if we go every other topic and so I can kind of keep up. You're going way ahead of me.
Sounds good.
Okay. The NASCAR Xfinity Series Ag Pro 300 at Talladega Super Speedway will take place on Saturday, April 20th, so it's going to be a big day of racing on Saturday. We'll start at 4 p.m. Eastern time for this race, with Fox carrying the pre-race coverage starting at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Radio coverage is available on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll race a distance of 300.58 miles over 113 laps. First two stages are going to be 25 laps each. First stage ends on lap 25, second stage on lap 50, and then the final stage will end on lap 113 for a total of 63 laps. So let's go ahead and we've got some dashing in for cash again this weekend.
Yeah, agreed. Always fun to watch the Dash for Cash program. I think Sunny Level been around for quite some time now, and based on his victory last week at Texas Motor Speedway, Sam Mayer took home that $100,000 bonus and also secured his chance to race for another bonus this weekend at Talladega. He'll actually be joined by RSS Racing's Ryan Sieg. Could be a huge payday for that team. Quite the finish between Mayer and Sieg last weekend. Great race to watch. Obviously disappointing that Sieg didn't get that win, just being from the small team, but definitely a great chance for a huge payday for that team this weekend at Talladega. And those two will be joined by Junior Motorsports Justin Allgaier and College Racing's A.J. Allmendinger to complete in what will be the third round of the Dash for Cash this season. Of those four drivers, only one has a prior win at Talladega. Sam Mayer has four starts in the Xfinity Series at Dega with one top five, but also has three DNFs. So typically he's been caught up in that carnage, and he's led just five laps at the 2.66-mile track. Ryan Sieg has 13 starts at Talladega with four top fives and five top tens and has led 31 laps in the past. Justin Allgaier has the most starts at Talladega amongst those Dash for Cash drivers with 16, and he's had four top fives and seven top tens and managed to lead 112 laps. And last but not least of those four drivers, A.J. Allmendinger, who has made six Xfinity Series starts and got the win in 2022, has three top fives and four top tens, and has also led 36 laps at the Super Speedway. So one of those four drivers is going to be walking away with an extra $100,000 for themselves and their team this weekend when they take the checkered flag at Talladega Super Speedway.
And that's always a good thing for any team. So let's talk about Talladega Super Speedway. It's hosted 35 Xfinity Series races, giving us 28 different race winners and 23 different pole winners. Only three drivers have actually won from the pole position or that first starting position. Joe Nemechek did it back in 1998, Tony Stewart in 2008, and Justin Haley in 2020. Cup Series regular Martin Truex Jr. has the most Xfinity Series wins at Talladega with three, but it's Joe Nemechek who holds the most records at the track. He's got the most poles there with five, most top tens at nine, and laps led 202, lead lap finishes 14, and laps completed 2,153, and that's tied with none other than Joey Logano for the most top fives at seven. Nemechek also holds the qualifying record with his 1997 speed at 193.517 miles per hour. Now, the Xfinity Series will be skipping practice this weekend and heading straight for qualifying on Friday, April the 19th. That starts at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time and will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So interesting that they're going to skip the practice at Talladega.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd love to see him still go out there and at least run a couple of laps just to be able to shake things down, make sure everything's good. I get that no one really likes to practice because they don't want to really draft because they don't want to tear up their equipment. But I am a little bit surprised that they're only going to run the qualifying laps. If I was the team and the drivers, would like to be able to at least get out there and shake the car down for a few laps, make sure there's no problems or anything like that. But interesting
exactly.
To see. We'll see what happens. I'm sure there'll be somebody that'll have an issue. But, man, we could probably could have caught that if we had practice. So, I digress from that mini rant. So we've got a couple of drivers to talk about here now that have had some pretty good success at Talladega in the Xfinity Series, and that's Colic Racing's A.J. Allmendinger and Jordan Anderson Racing's Jeb Burton. As mentioned before, Allmendinger won in 2022 after a back-and-forth battle with Sam Mayer in the final laps, has six starts with one win, three top fives, four top tens, and has led 36 laps. And meanwhile, Jeb Burton has seven starts at Talladega. He's actually won there twice in 2021 and 2023 with three top fives, four top tens, and has led 52 laps. And if he was to win again this weekend, he'd actually tie Martin Truex Jr. for most wins in the Xfinity Series at Talladega Super Speedway. I can't remember if we mentioned him in the odds, but now after reading that, I was going to click back over here quick and see what his odds were at for this weekend. He's down there at 25-1. So I feel that's a pretty tasty bet given his past success at the track and, you know, knowing anybody can win. So like Jeb Burton for maybe a little bit of a flyer there, if you're looking to make a bet or two to hit home on Saturday.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's talk about Sam Mayer over at Junior Motorsports. He won the race out at Texas Motor Speedway last weekend. And a couple of other drivers that may be ones for us to look at after that .002 finish at Texas last weekend. Ryan Sieg led 17 of those last 18 laps, but he had to battle Sam Mayer at the end. Mayer crossed the finish line first, but by mere inches. But it was the second closest finish in Xfinity Series history. That win marked Mayer's first of this season and his first at Texas Motor Speedway, but the fifth of his Xfinity Series career. Mayer is now hoping to keep that momentum rolling right on into Talladega with his number one team this weekend. But he's going to have his work cut out for him because three out of his four starts at that track have ended with a DNF. However, one thing to keep in mind with him is that he did post a runner-up finish at Talladega in 2022. So it will be interesting to see how Ryan Sieg, I think Ryan Sieg sometimes has a pretty good run on super speedways, and we'll see if those two will be battling it out again this weekend.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to top that finish from Texas last weekend for the Xfinity Series. I can tell you that, as enjoying the beautiful Midwest weather and down in Illinois watching the race on my friend's patio. So got to enjoy some great sun and a fantastic race. Really fun to watch. Xfinity Series is not disappointing this season so far. And really enjoyed it. Did you get a chance to watch that one at all, Sharon?
Yes, I did get a chance to watch it. I was watching inside with my brother, but boy, we were both standing on our feet at the end of that race wondering who was going to come out ahead. So
yeah, that was,
I was kind of pulling for Ryan Sieg, hoping he'd get that first win, but Sam Mayer really really had the car, I think, at the end there. He made up that 1.5 second gap in those final laps, and that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree. That was wild. That was a lot of fun to watch, for sure. And speaking of fun to watch, I got a bunch of Xfinity Series rookies now that the season's in full swing, kind of get a pretty good picture at where the rookie class is starting to stack up. And the rookie standings are led by Richard Childress Racing's Jesse Love. Been the leader of that all season long, continues to do so with 257 points. Colleagues Racing, Shane Van Ginsburg is in second with 175 points, but 82 back of Love. But a pretty good performance so far this season for Shane, coming over from Supercars and running a bunch of different tracks that he's never run on or seen before. So pretty impressed by him so far this year as well. Leland Honeyman Jr. in third with 114 points. Haley Deegan in fourth with 90. And Dawson Cram rounding out the Xfinity Series rookie class with 50 points as they head to Talladega.
All right. So now we're going to head over to the NASCAR Cup Series. We might have some extra time left over here, Brian. The GEICO 500 at Talladega Super Speedway is this Sunday, April the 21st, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. But if you want to watch the pre-race coverage, you'll want to head over to Fox at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, and radio coverage will also be available on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 500.08 miles over 188 laps. First two stages are 60 laps each, with stage one ending on lap 60, stage two on lap 120, and then the final stage will end on the last lap, lap 188.
Sorry, I was on mute there. So winner streak, big opportunity for playoff-seeking competitors at Talladega. Six different winners so far in the first nine races of this season, and a lot of opportunity for a driver to get visit seven different winners so far and wrap up their spot in the playoffs heading to Talladega. So seven different winners in the last seven races at Talladega, including this Sunday's defending winner, and that's none other than Richard Childress Racing's Kyle Busch, who is still seeking that first win in 2024. And that streak of seven different drivers actually began with Denny Hamlin back in October of 2020, and followed by Brad Keselowski, Bubba Wallace, Ross Chastain, Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, and Ryan Blaney won the October 2023 race at Talladega Super Speedway. Thus far, six different drivers are in a spot in the Cup Series playoffs by virtue of wins. William Byron, who has a trio of them now already, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, the winner last weekend, Christopher Bell, and Daniel Suarez. So I think great opportunity to see a seventh driver in victory lane this weekend to get that elusive spot locked in for the playoffs.
Exactly. So who's going to play the wild card this weekend is the big question. All right, let's take a look at some of the history of Talladega Super Speedway. Construction began what was then known as Alabama International Motor Speedway on May 23rd of 1968. The first Cup Series race at Talladega was held on September 14th, 1969. That event was run by Richard Brickhouse from Rocky Point, North Carolina. He drove a Dodge for car owner Ray Nichols. The average speed of that first race at the 2.66-mile track was 153.778 miles per hour. Now, the name of the track became known as Talladega Super Speedway in 1989, and the surface underwent its fourth repaving in September 19th of 2006. In total, there have been 109 Cup Series races at Talladega, one series event in 1969, and two races every year since 1970. NASCAR Hall of Famers that hold the qualifying and track and race records at Talladega include Bill Elliott holding the qualifying record. That was set. This was really big news when it happened, and I don't know if anybody's gone that fast since. Obviously not. That record at 212.809 miles per hour or 44.998 seconds was set on April 30th of 1987. Now, Mark Martin holds the race record for his win on May 10th of 1997. The average speed of that race was at 188.354 miles per hour, and the race was completed in 2 hours, 39 minutes, and 18 seconds. Do you remember that record being set by Bill Elliott at the 212 miles per hour?
I do not. As old as I'm getting, I was only 5 at the time, so I was not even a NASCAR fan yet, but I've definitely seen the highlights and stuff like that from them. That's just crazy. Part of me wishes they could still qualify that fast just to see it happen, but I don't think we'll ever see them go that fast. Again, with the safety and innovation that we have today. What's up?
I said restrictor plates. We'll never see that record broken because of restrictor plates. Yep.
Super cool to see. And it's pretty cool that it's Bill Elliott that has it. Definitely a fan favorite. So can't go wrong there.
Yeah,
good news
absolutely.
Is it really doesn't matter how fast you are, though, in qualifying. You can start from anywhere and still park it in victory lane. Actually, 8 different times in cup races at Dega. The race has been won from a starting spot outside the top 20. Jeff Gordon in the 2000 spring race actually won it from way back in the 36th position, and the deepest in the field that a current active Cup Series driver has started and still won is 34th, and Denny Hamlin did that back in the spring of 2014. Last season in April at Talladega, Kyle Busch went to victory lane after starting back in 17th position. So pretty much no matter where you start, you've still got a chance to get a win at a place like Talladega.
Yeah, I'm going to contradict what you just said, though, with this next topic, which is that starting position still matters at Dega. There's been 47 different drivers that won at least one pole at Talladega, and in the Cup Series, 24 of those pole winners have won more than one. So active pole winners that have won at Talladega include Christopher Bell and Chase Elliott both have 2. Bell had a 22 sweep, and Elliott won in 2019 and in 2016. 4 drivers have 1 pole at the track, along with 1 win. They include the most recent winner, Denny Hamlin, who won there in 23, Austin Dillon in 2019, Martin Truex in 16, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in 2017. However, there are a total of 15 of the 109 Cup Series races that were won at the pole or first starting position. That represents 13.76% of the total races. But the outside front row or second place is the most proficient starting spot in the field, producing more winners at 20 than any other starting position, and that's 18.3% of the total races. The Busch Light Pole qualifying is scheduled for Saturday, April the 20th. They'll start at 10:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1, MRN, and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio, if you want to catch all that information.
And now we've kind of covered where you start at Talladega. Let's talk a little bit about where we finish. 109 different cup races at Talladega Super Speedway have produced 51 different winners, and 27 of those 51 have actually won multiple times. This weekend, 9 former winners are in the field, and the winningest active driver at Talladega Super Speedway is none other than Brad Keselowski with 6 wins. Last time he went to victory lane was 2021, but also has victories in 2009, 2012, 2014, 2016, and 2017. A couple of drivers here with three wins, both at Talladega, Ryan Blaney and Joey Logano. Blaney last winning in 2023 and Logano last winning at Talladega in 2018. As we mentioned, Kyle Busch won this race last April. He's got two victories at Talladega, with that other one coming way back in 2008. Last week's winner, Chase Elliott, also won twice at Talladega in 2022 and 2019. Denny Hamlin has won twice at Talladega as well in 2020 and 2014, and then a trio of drivers with one victory each at Talladega, Ross Chastain in 2022, Bubba Wallace with that victory in 2021, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. back in 2017. The all-time winningest driver at Talladega Super Speedway, of course, is none other than NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Earnhardt, who has 10 wins, with that first one coming in 1983, and then basically dominating most of the 90s, won again in 84, swept the races in 1990, won in 91, 93, 94, swept them again in 99, and earned that last victory at Talladega in 2000. And as we mentioned, Keselowski leads all active drivers with six victories. Two most recent winners at Talladega, RCR's Kyle Busch in April 23 and Chase Elliott in October 23. Busch still looking for that first win this season, and of course Elliott picking up that first win of the season last weekend at Texas Motor Speedway.
Yep. A lot of people look forward to the races at Talladega Super Speedway. It's known as one of the most competitive tracks on the Cup Series schedule, and it's the perfect stage for some wild side-by-side action. So Talladega holds the all-time record in green flag passes for the lead in a single Cup Series event, with 348 green for the lead, and that was set in October of last year. And then also holds the record for the all-time total green flag passes in a single Cup Series event, 23,765 total green flag passes throughout the field. That was set in October of 2013, so pretty impressive. Last year, Talladega Super Speedway's April race produced 21 different leaders and 57 different lead changes. The playoff race later that season in October gave us 24 different leaders and 70 lead changes throughout the event. So a lot of action when you're talking about Talladega Super Speedway races.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's always obviously tough to call who's going to win, and reason why we tune in every week and watch, for sure. Not every driver can master that skill at drafting at Talladega, but the ones that can learn to manipulate air to their benefit at 200 miles an hour are able to win some of those biggest races. Mentioned Dale Earnhardt's got 10 wins at the track and nine different active winners at the track, of course, none other than Brad Keselowski with those six wins. Pair of Penske teammates with Logano and Blaney have three wins each, and both drivers there are also looking for their first wins of the 2024 season. So hopefully for a big day for Penske, and maybe one of their drivers can get that victory this weekend at Talladega.
And I think we mentioned all three of those drivers in our fantasy picks for this weekend.
We did.
All right. Yep. First-time winners happened at Talladega Super Speedway in 23-11s, Bubba Wallace scored his and the organization's first Cup Series win in the October Talladega race of 2021. And in the process, Wallace became the 12th different driver to get his first career win at this huge track, joining active drivers Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who did it in 2017, and Brad Keselowski in 2019. And let me just say, I think it would be great if Brad Keselowski could win again this weekend. He came so close, last week. He finished second, so I think he's due for a win sometime soon. Okay, let's look at some of the other first-time winners coming up here. And we mentioned Bubba Wallace winning in 2021 and getting his first win, Ricky Stenhouse and Brad Keselowski. But let's add some other names to that list. Brian Vickers got his first win in 2016, the fall race. Ken Schrader in the summer race of 88, along with Phil Parsons, who won in the spring of 1988. In 1987, it was Davey Allison getting his first victory there. Bobby Hillen Jr. got his first victory in 1986. In 81, it was Ron Bouchard. In 78, Lenny Pond got his first win. Dick Brooks won his first race in 1973. And Richard Brickhouse got his first victory there in 1969. A lot of history at Talladega Super Speedway.
Yeah, no doubt. And I second what you said there about Kozlowski getting that win. That would be pretty huge to see, you know, driving, making a move over to RFK Racing and things like that. And I think, you know, that would be really great to see him get the win and do that for the team. So definitely one of the best races on the schedule for him to be able to do that here this weekend. And now we kind of move into some of our kind of news and notes, little et ceteras from the Sprint Cup Series for this weekend. We got a big performance Saturday night, a concert at Talladega from Grammy-nominated country artist Walker Hayes. Of course, Talladega, well known for the party atmosphere and the fun that can be had down there on the infield. Walker Hayes will be performing Saturday night during the race weekend. Five-time ACM Award nominee and Mobile, Alabama native. So great to see kind of them putting the local native together with that, with Talladega. So a little bit of a quote here from Talladega Super Speedway President Brian Crichton, saying that Walker is a perfect choice for their Saturday night concert and will do an incredible job representing both Alabama and Talladega Super Speedway. When you have an artist with an in-state connection come perform for our fans, it's always a special night, and we know that Walker is going to put on an amazing show as part of all the festivities going on throughout the weekend. Hayes has collected a ton of awards over the last several years, nominated for Grammy, 5 ACM Awards, CMT Award, CMA Award, and 6 Billboard Music Awards. Fancy Like, AA, and You Broke Up With Me were 3 top 10 country radio hits for Hayes, and he's got over 2 billion artist streams to date. And a little bit of a quote here from Hayes as well. Getting to play my home state of Alabama is always a treat, but getting to play Talladega Super Speedway makes the occasion extra special. Nothing says country quite like NASCAR, and I have a feeling this crowd is going to bring the energy. Me, my band, and my family are so looking forward to this one. See y'all soon. Hayes, of course, just wrapped up headlining the Duck Buck Tour, which was his second arena tour in the last 2 years after he closed out the Glad You're Here Tour last fall. He also co-wrote a book, Glad You're Here, with his best friend, Craig Allen Cooper, which releases on May 3rd, or which released on May 3rd of 2022. Kind of tells the story of Walker finding faith through Craig's friendship and inspired the song Craig. Be a Craig Fund was set up based off that single, and it's a way to pay it forward and make the path easier for struggling families. So Hayes doing a lot for his local communities, his friends, and ready to bring a party to Talladega Super Speedway this weekend. I don't think it really takes much effort to bring a party down there. It always seems like it happens. So definitely a track I'd love to check out at some point in the future.
You're right. It's always a party at Talladega, and I've heard that the infield is where a lot of the action really happens. All right. We're going to talk about some stats here as well as some upcoming driver milestones in the Cup Series. Michael McDowell is going to make his 475th Cup Series start at Talladega, becoming the 53rd different driver in history to make 475 or more starts. McDowell is from Phoenix, Arizona. He's posted 1 pole, 2 wins, including his 21 Daytona 500 victory, 9 top fives, 39 top tens in his 474 starts. He's earned a spot in the playoffs twice since 2021, as well as 2023. His best finish in the championship standings in his Cup Series career was 15th, and that was just last year. Now, Alex Bowman is expected to make his 300th start at Dover, along with Noah Gregson, making his 50th start at that track. At Darlington, it's Ross Chastain expected to make his 200th Cup Series start. Chase Elliott will make his 300th start at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And also at Charlotte Motor Speedway, it's Corey LaJoy making his 250th career start. There's four drivers here that are hoping to get their next win at Talladega, and if they do so, they're going to mark some milestones as well. Right now, Denny Hamlin has 53 Cup Series wins. His next win would tie him with Hall of Famer Lee Petty for 12th on the all-time wins list with 54 victories apiece. Martin Truex sits at 34 Cup Series wins. His next win would tie him with Brad Keselowski for 24th on the all-time wins list at 35. Joey Logano is at 34 Cup Series wins. His next win would be a tie with Hall of Famer Fireball Roberts for 27th on that all-time list at 33 each. And Kyle Larson at 24 Cup Series wins. His next win would tie him with Jim Pascal and Joe Weatherly, fourth on the all-time wins list at 25 wins apiece. So we've got some other teams to spotlight as well.
Yeah, so member spotlight for a team member heading into this weekend. I also love how Fox has kind of been doing this during the broadcast as well. I think that does a great job of kind of driving the points home and for the team, and, you know, it's a lot more than just the driver that goes into getting that car out there and into victory lane every weekend. So heading into this weekend at Talladega, two members from the state of Alabama that NASCAR has spotlighted to bring a little bit of attention to, and that's 2311 Racing's interior specialist Adam Crawford, who hails from Semmes, Alabama, and Trackhouse Racing jackman Josh Appleby from Athens, Alabama. Crawford attended Mobile Christian High School as a former driver that competed in the Southern Super Series and past late model series prior to joining up with 2311 Racing. And Trackhouse's Appleby is a former college athlete that played football at the University of Louisville. And if you're a newer fan to NASCAR, a lot of pit crew members are former college and sometimes even professional pro athletes, a lot of former football players and stuff like that as well. So a big move over from that, and it definitely gets their competitive nature still has a chance to, you know, hold course and be part of a sport in a different capacity.
Okay, yeah, it's really good when – I love what they're doing on TV, too, where they're spotlighting, and I think you've mentioned this before. They're spotlighting a lot of these crew members, and I think that's fantastic because they do so much for a driver with what they do as part of the crew, and it's really good to see them getting kudos for the work that they're doing. All right. I think we've already established that NASCAR has been competing at Alabama for quite a while. There have been 181 Cup Series races held in the state of Alabama, but it's been done at seven different racetracks. The very first NASCAR National Series race was held in the state of Alabama was an event at Lakeview Speedway in Mobile, Alabama, and that was in 1951. That race was won by Alabama native Tim Flock, and he was driving an Oldsmobile. But let's take a look at some of these other tracks. Let's start with Montgomery Motor Speedway. They've had six Cup Series races going back to 1955. Lakeview Speedway, we mentioned that from Mobile, Alabama. Two races dating back to 1951, and those were Cup Series races. Huntsville Speedway in Huntsville, Alabama, one race. That was in 1962. These next two tracks also only had one race, Dixie Speedway in Birmingham in 1960 and Chisholm Speedway in Montgomery dating back to 1956. Birmingham International Raceway out in Birmingham, Alabama has had eight races all in the Cup Series. That dates back to 1958. And Talladega Super Speedway has the most at 109 Cup Series races, 35 Xfinity Series races, and 18 Truck Series races combined. That's 162 of the 181 races at the track in Alabama. And their first race took place in 1969. So some real big Alabama history there. The first Cup Series race held at Talladega Super Speedway in 1969 was won by Richard Brickhouse, and he was driving a Dodge. Imagine that.
Yeah, miss having Dodge in the series. Maybe they'll come back supporting those new manufacturers.
Yes, indeed. All right. A lot of news that we covered here, and we've got a lot of time left before our Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation. So I was thinking, Brian, maybe we can take a look as we bridge over to Hot Topics at some of the news in all three series. So I'm going to take a look at the Truck Series here first. And I'm going to try to single out just the Truck Series news here. And probably the biggest news is that Faction 46 is going to celebrate Petty's 75th anniversary during the Darlington Throwback Weekend. That race isn't going to be happening for a while here, but that's kind of exciting that Faction 46 is celebrating that 75th for Petty Enterprises.
Yeah, agreed, and I think it's a cool paint scheme. I like when they kind of put the number back looking kind of like Petty as well. So always neat to see.
Definitely. When we look at the Xfinity Series side here, let's talk about Sam Mayer. RTIC Outdoors is going to be sponsoring Sam Mayer for four races coming up. So that win last week kind of helped him get some new sponsors. So I think the first race is going to be at Darlington on Saturday, May the 11th. But pretty cool to see Sam Mayer picking up some extra sponsorship there.
Yeah, agreed. And I think RTIC has done a little bit of a partnership with Chase Briscoe at the Cup level as well. I've seen stuff on that. So maybe kind of dipping their feet into the waters a little bit more in with NASCAR sponsorship. You know, their company CEOs has indicated they have a lot of blue-collar values. They think align well with NASCAR. So great to see them kind of getting a little bit more involved, especially in today's environment. Never a bad thing to have more sponsors wanting to get into the sport.
Yeah, he's got some – Huck's Market is also going to sponsor Sam Mayer out at Nashville and Indianapolis. So, again, he's definitely earned it, and I'm glad to see him getting that recognition from the sponsor perspective. If you want to get to know Leland Honeyman Jr. a little bit more, you can check out an article that was put together here over at J-Ski's. That gives you a little bit of knowledge about Leland Honeyman. He drives the number 42 for Young's Motorsports in the Xfinity Series. And we hear his name quite a lot, Brian, but it's really cool when you see a feature article like this that gives us a chance to kind of know his history and where he's come from and who he is. He's 19 years old and, as I mentioned, a full-time driver for Young's Motorsports.
Yeah, agreed. And actually, he kind of struck up a friendship with the McDowell family, who kind of hail from out there in the same Phoenix area, and was able to kind of get that going. McDowell caught McDowell's attention when he was running at what they now call Trackhouse Motorplex, formerly the GoPro Motorplex, racing some go-karts. And that kind of helped blossom him kind of into getting some connections and getting to where he is today. So pretty cool to see. And yeah, curious to see how his career progresses. I'm only 19 years old. I'm driving, you know, full-time for Young's Motorsports in the Xfinity Series. So good opportunity for him, and we'll see where it goes from here.
All right. I also see here they've got some tire notes for the Xfinity Series race as well as the Cup Series race. So as long as we're doing this, can be an extension, I guess, of our preview. They're going to have the Goodyear Eagle 15-inch Super Speedway radials in the Xfinity Series race, and they're going to get four sets for that event. The tire codes don't mean a lot to us, but I will tell you, tire codes are really important to the drivers. The left side code is going to be the D6102. The right side is the D6126. Tire circumference is another thing that we don't always think about, but the left side circumference is 87.76 inches, the right side 88.58 inches. And the minimum recommended inflation. Now, this is something I do keep an eye on pretty closely, and I think it's really important that the drivers stay as close as they can within their recommendation. The left front is 26 PSI. As well as the left rear, the right front at 50 PSI, while the right rear is at 48 PSI. Teams a lot of times will try to find a competitive advantage by playing with the PSIs on these recommended inflations, and that's when sometimes you see the blowouts happen on the track, because it's a risk versus reward calculated risk when they take it, but it can go bad very quickly. So switches to the Atlanta right side tire at Talladega. So NASCAR, again, made a switch to using the same right side tire that they used at Atlanta for the Xfinity Series teams this weekend as well. So something for fans to be aware of going into that race. Any thoughts about that, Brian?
Oh, no, just kind of echo what you said about, you know, everyone's always trying to push the tire pressure as much as they can and, you know, keep it, you know, on the edge as much as possible. So, like you said, sometimes it's a little, they go overboard. That's when we see some tire issues sometimes. So always good to kind of see, especially when they make some tire changes. Could definitely shake things up from that standpoint.
Okay. For the Cup Series, they're going to use the Goodyear Eagle 18-inch Super Speedway radials. They'll get one set for qualifying and seven sets for the race. Six race sets plus that qualifying set make up those seven sets. The left side code is going to be the D5142, while the right side code is D5116. Tire circumference on the left side is 89.53 inches, the right side 89.76 inches. And the PSI for the left front, it's 28 PSI. The left rear will also be 28 PSI. On the right front, it's 52 PSI. The right rear, 50 PSI. So the storyline at Talladega allows for tire strategy for the teams. The pit and tire strategy is always a big part of racing at Talladega Super Speedway. And while some teams will see tire wear on NASCAR's longest oval, there will be some chances for them to mix in a two-tire and fuel-only pit stop. So that's something to watch for this weekend. The priority at Talladega is often staying in step with teammates when they're deciding how many tires to take in order to maintain one's place in the draft. Now, Cup teams will know what to and from this weekend's tire package. We'll have a run. Cup teams will know what to. That sentence doesn't make a lot of sense. But they ran this package basically in Talladega. They haven't run it since 22. So that they make a good point there with that comment, though. There's a lot of strategy that sometimes comes into play with these races at Talladega, Brian, and a lot of it does have to do with who their drafting partner is. So communication is a big part of racing. And I always think about that when people say racing is just a bunch of cars going in a circle around the track.
I mean, that's what it might look like if you're just glancing at it on TV, but as we know all too well, there's a lot more that goes into it than that, for sure. And as you mentioned, yeah, keeping with your drafting partners and your manufacturer teammates, if you will, as well throughout the weekend, throughout the race, will definitely be a key, and also often dictates when they decide they're going to hit pit road. Usually all the Toyotas will come down with the Toyotas, and the Fords and the Chevys all try to stick together as well. So not only do you have your normal organizational teammates this weekend. You've got a lot of manufacturer teammates that you want to stick with and try to pit with as well. So definitely key, and definitely a lot of communication that goes on, probably even more than we realize and more than we can even hear over the radio between all that. But typically, you know, the manufacturers, drivers all get together throughout the weekend as well. And it's, you know, made a very good point of, hey, stick with the blue ovals, stick with the bow ties, stick with the Toyotas, and everyone kind of stay together from that standpoint until you get down to the last couple laps, of course. And it's, in most cases, a free for all and every driver for themselves.
And that is so true. And we'll get into a lot of other topics when we get into our NASCAR Hot Topic sound-off. But, Brian, did you see the news that Bubba and Amanda Wallace are expecting their first?
I did see that. Exciting news for them. Oh, they do a great job managing social media, both Bubba and Amanda. I think always kind of fun and keeping it real and just, you know, I think showing kind of their fun side, and it's cool to see, especially as, you know, Bubba often gets a lot of undeserved hate thrown his way on social media, and I love to see that he's still just out there interacting and, you know, sharing his life and behind the scenes and stuff like that. So cool to see, cool announcement, and congrats to both Bubba and Amanda, and hopefully everything goes well, and we'll have a baby Wallace joining the families at the track coming up here probably, I guess, next season, right? I don't know when the due date is, but maybe the end of this year. And, yeah, it'll be exciting for them.
Yeah, Baby Watch will actually start probably the end of September, beginning of October. Baby Wallace is due October the 8th.
All right. So, yeah, might have a little Baby Watch during the playoffs. So
exactly. Exactly.
I'm sure they're hoping for a midweek delivery.
Absolutely. I'm going to check here real quick and see if anybody's joined us yet. Nobody's joined us yet. I thought maybe we could get an early start on Hot Topics, but that doesn't look like it's going to be the case. Brian, a couple of other topics that we'll probably hit on during the Hot Topic sound-off is that we've got two sides of the story when it comes to the charter deal and where they are. Jimmy Johnson came out with some news this week, and so did Steve O'Donnell. I don't think they're anywhere close because this is a process, as Jimmy Johnson points out, but kind of cool to see them giving us kind of a progress report on where they are with talking about the charter deal.
Yeah, and you always wonder, I mean, obviously a ton of negotiations and a lot that goes into that, you know, how much they're revealing, how much they're using, you know, the media and the fan base to reveal a little bit and try to push things towards their side. Obviously, a deal's got to get done at some point. Just, you know, I don't know. It's interesting to see. Yeah, it's nice to see a little bit of behind the scenes, but obviously in those there's a lot of confidentiality and a lot of things that just can't and won't be revealed as well. So you never really know everything that goes into those negotiations, but a lot of money on the table, a lot of things to be decided for sure. Obviously, NASCAR wants more money and the teams want more money. So it's a matter of kind of how they settle and how they come into that. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it all. I just hope something gets done. I don't like when that's the headlines as opposed to the on-track product or, you know, drivers and stories like that. Definitely a not as much positive news when stuff like that goes down. Obviously, we've seen some real contentious stuff in the past in motorsports, something like an IndyCar cart split and things like that. Not anywhere near that level at this point anyway. But, you know, I think just you want to see it get done and just move on and focus on how we continue to improve the on-track product and the fan experience, in my opinion.
Okay, well, I bring it up only as a preview to our Hot Topic conversation in a little bit here. We're also going to be talking about the short track package. NASCAR says that they're continuing their work there. But then I also see here that Mark Martin, NASCAR Hall of Famer, and Army General Daniel R. Hokanson are also named dignitaries for the Geico 500 this weekend. So really cool that we're going to get a chance to see Mark Martin this weekend out at Talladega Super Speedway.
Never a bad day when you can interact and see Mark Martin. So definitely hailed back to kind of my earlier days as a NASCAR fan and love to see him.
Yes. Yeah, Mark Martin, a very well-respected driver, former driver, I should say, from NASCAR and a Hall of Famer. And I've never seen him be unhappy. I think Mark Martin has a perpetual smile on his face all the time.
I agree, for sure. And I don't know if anyone follows him on social media, but he was kind of posting about their adventures in the RV and stuff like that, and always really cool to see.
It definitely is. All right. I guess it's time for us to switch over to our Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation. I know Andy wasn't sure if he was going to make it or not. He's not here right now. I'll keep an eye out for him. And we'll see if he shows up. But what hot topic do you want to start off with, Brian?
Maybe we can kind of kick it off with the penalties and stuff that came out this week and go from there.
Yeah, kind of surprising. We don't always see this many penalties come out after a race. But, yeah, NASCAR suspended 8 National Series team members after Texas. And I was kind of shocked. One of them, I think, was a substance abuse suspension, actually. And I was going to start with that one, but now I can't find it real quick. I'm sure we'll come across it in this article. But Kyle Larson, we knew that one was coming. That was for the tire that fell off of his number 5 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet and that race at Texas. So Calvin Teague and Brandon Johnson, the rear tire changer in Jackman, those guys are going to be expected suspensions on the penalty report. 4 more team members. Let me see what the they've been suspended for the next 2 points paying races due to that detached wheel, so we won't see them at the track. I haven't seen anything about them appealing that. I'm pretty sure that's going to hold up. And then those were the only 2 expected suspensions that were on the penalty report, but 4 more team members, 3 from the Cup Series and 1 from the Xfinity Series, were suspended due to safety violations or violations regarding protective clothing and equipment. So Zachary Taylor, Zachary Yeager, the tire carrier from Chris Busch's number 17 RFK team. Jacob Holmes, the tire carrier for Christopher Bell's number 20 JGR team. Doug Warwick, the jackman for Austin Hill's 33 RCR team, were the 3 Cup Series members found to be in violations in that regard. So Yeager was for his gloves, while Holmes and Warwick had issues with their helmets this weekend. Brandon Harder, the fueler for Brandon Jones' number 9 junior motorsports team on the Xfinity Series, that was an issue with the fueler's apron that caused his penalty. All 4 crew members for clothing and equipment will be eligible to return to racing following this weekend's race. Chris Carrier, the crew chief for the number 75 Henderson Racing team in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, was fined $5,000 and suspended for the next 2 truck races for 2 unsecured lug nuts in the post-race inspection. The 8th and final suspension on the list was Nicholas Covey, who had been serving as the jackman for Austin Dillon's number 3 RCR pit crew. Covey is the one that I was looking for the substance abuse policy, and so his suspension is indefinite, according to the sanctioning body. 2 additional Xfinity Series crew chiefs were fined for unsecured lug nuts following the Xfinity and Truck Series events. Patrick Donahue, the crew chief of the number 48 Big Machine racing team, and Philip Bell, the crew chief for the number 9 junior motorsports team, were fined $5,000 each for those infractions. So those are lug nuts. We usually see lug nut infractions pretty regularly, but this was kind of really big news because there were so many suspensions covering a variety of issues. Any additional thoughts there, Brian?
Yeah, definitely kind of all across the board. I think probably I think the biggest penalty report we've seen this season. I feel like the most names on it in quite some time. And, you know, like you said, you expected to see the ones for the tire with Larson and some of the lug nut violations, I believe you mentioned, in the truck series. But I think the surprising one, obviously, was kind of the equipment stuff. And we saw that with Joey Logano and how they modified his glove earlier this year. And then you heard some stuff about how they're going to crack down a little bit on equipment stuff. And I might be a little bit unknowledgeable when it comes to all that. But from my understanding, a lot of, like, your fire safety gear and stuff like that essentially has expiration dates and things on it, as well as, I believe, helmets and different things like that have to go through, you know, different checks at different points in time. So I don't know if it's just they're cracking down a little bit more on it this year. Teams are getting a little bit more lax with following some of that stuff. Not really sure what the backstory is there, but yeah, a little bit surprising to see like so many of them and stuff like that. And doesn't seem like there's even maybe there's a warning system and they feel like people have been taking advantage of that. Cause it's weird. I don't think we've seen anything for safety equipment stuff when it comes to the gloves and things like that. And I don't even know the last time there was something like that. So that comes off as a little bit surprising, but I don't know if we'll see more of that in future weeks or if that's just kind of a, hey, let's just make sure we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's when it comes to all this stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. We're not quite as up to speed on some of these equipment kind of regulations, if you will. But I do think that NASCAR is doing its due diligence and taking a look at what is going on. And if there are expiration dates, I think it's important for NASCAR to keep an eye on that for safety reasons. That's why they have those regulations in place, is to keep these drivers safe. And I think about which driver was it, Brian? I know you'll remember this, that had that fire on pit road at Texas Motor Speedway. If you've got expired equipment on your person, that could be a serious infraction.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely, it's, you know, one of those things where you don't think it's a big deal until it's a big deal, right? Like, it might seem like a minor thing, but if you don't have the right thing at the right time, it obviously can be very detrimental. So I think something to keep an eye on the rest of the season.
Yeah, hopefully this will be it, and we won't see it the rest of the season. It's one of my least favorite topics to talk about, actually, is the penalty report. But, you know, when it happens, I do feel a responsibility to make sure people are aware that it's happening so that they can be in the know. So let's go ahead and move on to our next topic here. And we kind of previewed it a little bit when we talked about the charter agreement. Jimmy Johnson gave an update with regard to the driver and team owner side of it. And that was available this week. He says that teams are, I really liked some of his comments because I think it's going to, his comment on this was, I think it's going to come down to deep in the year. Right now, it's still posturing, Johnson said. I know we feel like the clock is ticking, but if you look at how much time is left, we're just getting into the eighth inning, maybe the ninth inning of what really needs to happen in the negotiation for all parties. So I like that statement because this is a process. It doesn't, negotiations happen over a long period of time, and we as fans usually get the blast of it as the real news that comes out of all the negotiations and that process as it takes place. So I really applaud Jimmy Johnson for what he had to say. Another part of his statement was that, but what's ultimately been most impressive to him is just how the team ownership group has stuck together. I think that we're a lot stronger as a unified group, hearing a consistent message. That's something that's been more difficult for owners in the past, but the ownership group has been very committed to that, and I think it's been very useful. So the best thing for NASCAR would be a new charter agreement with its race teams. And I'll tell you what, we've been talking about this a lot here at Fan for Racing, too. It's hard to believe that they're talking about some of these race charter agreements being in the millions of dollars. $20 million was the last I heard, and Monday night we were talking about $100 million is what they're talking about is expected for the Stewart Haas Racing charters. So I do feel like something needs to be done in that regard. Steve O'Donnell, just to give the other side of this, and this is NASCAR's part of that, he says it's called the never-ending question when it comes to the charter agreement. He says we're very close, but he also goes on to say, ultimately, when our owners look at where the sport's potential is in terms of the all-new media partners, the balance that we do have with the linear and now being able to go with Amazon and TNT Sports, all opportunities we have with content, I think they get it. O'Donnell says everyone wants to sit down and argue over who's going to split the money the right way, but ultimately we'll get to a good place. The original charter agreement was negotiated in 2015, the first year of NASCAR's current 10-year media rights agreement that expires in 2024. Three people familiar with the teams and this thinking all said they disagree with O'Donnell's assessment of the deal being very close. One of the people noted that there's meetings coming up between NASCAR and Race Team Alliance in the next couple of weeks, but there's still significant issues yet to be resolved. So NASCAR are putting on a good face, but people behind the scenes are nowhere close. So what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, shocking. I think I'm more willing to lean towards Johnson's side and say that they're probably not quite close. I don't know. It doesn't seem to make much sense to me to say we're close when it doesn't seem like they're close, but I think I pulled up some quotes from Jimmy Johnson's media availability last week, and I like this from it. It's a steal line he said from Rick Hendrick, "It's not about the money until it's about the money." So I think I like how that's said, but you know, Johnson's kind of got a unique perspective this year too, right? Normally he's looked at it from just the driver's side of things. Well, now he's part of the ownership group with Legacy Motor Club. And, you know, he said it's his first time in the world as a team owner. He's done a lot more listening than he has talking and trying to let the people kind of handling it do their jobs. But what's ultimately to him and the most impressive is how the team ownership group, I think he's mentioned, has stuck together and they're stronger as a unified group, which I think maybe is a little bit different than what we've seen in the past where maybe things are a little bit more dispersed when it comes to negotiations. But I think, I think there's definitely still some work to do there. I think like anything, they'll get an agreement done. I'm not really concerned about that yet at this point, but I think it's a little bit ridiculous for NASCAR to come out and say the deal is close when it doesn't really sound like that's the case. I think just the, hey, we're working through it and we're confident we're going to get there would have been the message maybe I would have put out if I were them. But thankfully, I don't have to make those decisions. But, yeah, I think I don't think it's necessarily close yet, but it does sound like there's at least some progress being made and some potential progress coming up in these future meetings.
Yeah, I generally have a lot of respect for NASCAR, but it does seem kind of weird, I guess is the word I'm going to use, that they would come out and say it's close when there's obviously people kind of saying the opposite of that. But I do agree that they will eventually get there, and I think Jimmy Johnson and Steve O'Donnell do have that in common. And one of the other things when it comes to negotiations is a compromise is a big part of negotiations. And looking for what their commonality is when they're talking about negotiating. So, and I think that's the bottom line here. There has to be a point where they agree on something that is something that they both want in the end. And that involves that's where the compromise comes in. I think they're both headed in the same direction. I think they just have disagreements on how they're going to get there. And both sides, and I say this very sincerely, in the end, both sides have to have a little bit of compromising to kind of come up with the solution that's going to work for everybody. And unfortunately, I know Jimmy Johnson says that the RTA is pretty much the one thing that's good there is that they're in agreement and they feel like they're bringing strength to the table when it comes to those negotiations. But the one word of caution that I would put in there is that it's good to bring strength to the table, but you also have to be willing to negotiate if you're going to get what you want. So we'll see how it all works out. And I think both sides need to understand that there has to be a compromise when it comes to the final solution.
I would agree.
Okay, so we'll see what happens. It's an ongoing, continuing story. For sure.
Yeah, it won't be the last time we talk about it this year.
No, it won't, unfortunately. So what's our next topic? Well, actually, I think there's only one other on our list, isn't there?
I think so, yeah. It's always another recurring one that we've had this season and I think we'll continue on throughout the season, and that's talking about the work on the short track package and kind of where things are at with that and what may or may not be happening depending on who you ask and what day of the week it is, it seems like.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, Denny Hamlin is one of the voices when it comes to the short track package. And he has his platform, Actions Detrimental Podcast, where he can express his thoughts. And here's some of his thoughts with regard to that package. Denny says they're going to really focus on tires and tracks. Goodyear was there. Obviously, they hear us loud and clear on what we're trying to achieve. The biggest difference with the next gen versus the Gen 6 is that the loads are significantly lower than what they were. Really, on the left side is the big place where we really need to get the tire wear working a bit more on the next gen. So they're looking for the left side tire wear. They're going to try to get really aggressive at some tracks. They've got some tire tests coming up, and they showed us the schedule for that. Hamlin goes on to say NASCAR definitely said publicly last week, they said it to us that horsepower is just not an option for various reasons. If we're going to keep the horsepower, we should definitely, in my opinion, meaning Hamlin's opinion, work on getting rid of the shifting. In order to do that, they're going to need to make the upper RPM slightly higher, or else we're going to be running just way too low RPM in the middle of the corner. I certainly think that shifting is not helping at all on the short tracks. Beyond that, it looks like we're going to focus on tires to fix the short tracks. Then there's a statement here from Sportsnet that also means NASCAR has done tinkering with various aerodynamic solutions from reducing downforce through the spoiler and the rear diffuser and going all in with Goodyear on finding the fix with regard to the tire compound. So your thoughts about Denny Hamlin's statements and where NASCAR is going with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think I get definitely for sure like what he's saying and what he thinks needs to be done for sure, but it does seem like, I don't know, it's interesting because I feel like we hear like NASCAR is thinking this, drivers are saying we should do this. It doesn't seem, you know, similar to kind of what Johnson said about the negotiations for the charter stuff. They feel like everyone's in the same direction. I feel like everyone, even from the driver's standpoint, different drivers have different ideas on what they should do and what they should try, and it doesn't seem like necessarily anyone really knows 100% that that's what we should do. I mean, I know everyone thinks that we're all experts, but I don't know what the right answer is, but I feel like it has to be something, and they haven't, right? We've seen how many short track races this year, and nothing's really been done to change it yet. And I think, you know, my concern is just kind of driving early the other morning, it kind of hit me. I'm like, man, they got to do something about the short track package before we get to Iowa. Like, we're going to go to Iowa with the same short track package and the race is going to suck and everyone's going to be like, oh, Iowa sucks. We should have never raced Cup here, right? Like, Iowa's a phenomenal track. It's put on some great truck and Xfinity races. ARCA races there. IndyCar races there. So I'm really hoping that they're going to make a decision to do something. But we're, you know, less than 2 months away from Iowa Speedway race weekend now, and I don't know if anything's going to happen.
Yeah, I understand that concern for sure. But actually, I kind of think they're moving in the right direction. I think that before we went to Bristol, everybody was saying they need to do something with the downforce. They need to do something with the downforce. And I remember, I forget which crew chief it is now, but they had just won a race. I think it was Christopher Bell's crew chief. They had just won the race, and they were saying that they don't want to do anything with downforce. And I think that they thought that the reduced downforce was exactly what helped them to win. And they felt that the tire was what needed to change. And I think when they went to Bristol, I think that proved out that that is, in fact, what needs to change on the short tracks. Now, they went a little bit too far with the tire at Bristol, and a lot of people had to adapt to that situation because I don't think they expected it to wear quite as quickly as it did. But I do think that that was moving in the right direction. And I forget who Bell's crew chief is, but I thought he really made it very clear during his post-race media interview that they had already started to make those adjustments with the tire and that they were already – and that's why they won that race. And then, like I say, Bristol kind of proved that out. So they're not there yet, but I know when NASCAR came out with the next-gen car, they admitted more or less that this was a process. They knew that this car was not where it needed to be and that it was going to be a process for them to get to the point that it was going to be what they needed for all the different types of tracks that they race on. In this particular case, it's the short track package that needed the most work. And I think I think Denny hit the nail on the head when he said that he knows that there's going to be some testing before they can get this short track package where it needs to be. I hope it's in time for the Iowa race. I don't know if it will or it won't because I like that track too. But I think the fact that they've given up on the downforce and NASCAR says that's non-negotiable, they have the downforce package where it is so that they can attract new manufacturers into the sport. And I forget where I read that, but I know that they did say that's the reason they don't want to make any changes in the downforce part of the package, and that's why they're focusing on the tires. And I do have faith that Goodyear and NASCAR will come up with the tire package that will work on the short tracks. I give them kudos for acknowledging that they're not there yet and they're still working on it. But I do think that they will get there, hopefully sooner rather than later, to the point that you're making, Brian, because I'd like to see them have a good race at Iowa Speedway. And I hope that they don't make their decision, excuse me, about the future of Iowa Speedway based on the short track package, because I think that would be unfair if they haven't solved that problem yet when they get to Iowa. I'm sorry for my voice, but I get a little, pardon me?
I said, no, yeah, no worries. That time of year where allergies and all that stuff were all failing. I feel like I sound so nasally this week.
I've been having problems too with all the wind. The pollen is just everywhere. But what's your follow-up on that?
You know, I think, actually, Logano really kind of summarized it up best. I've got some quotes here from his, I don't know if it's his weekly segment he does on Sirius or whatever, but we have to separate what we want in a street car tire as consumers and what we want in a race car tire, right?
race car tires needs to wear out. We want tire wear. That's what, you know, makes the car so difficult to handle. That's what allows for the great racing that we've seen sometimes in the past. But at the same time, when it comes to our street car, we don't want a tire that wears out. We want tires we can drive for 100,000 miles, right? And
right,
if you're Goodyear, you don't want the storyline of we built a tire that wears so much that it falls apart in these races, and then, you know, the storyline is, oh, Goodyear makes tires that fall apart, right? Logano puts it really well when he says, like, what the deal is that Goodyear's just made such a great tire that it just doesn't wear out. It doesn't fall apart. There's no tire wear really anywhere on most tracks they go to these days. And that sucks when it comes to racing. It's great when it comes to your street car. Great, put Goodyear tires on. They're great tires to have on your street car. When it comes to a race car, you want that tire that wears out, and we've got to try to figure out what that fine line is, and obviously it's a very fine line, into how to do that. And I don't know what that answer is, right? Obviously, we're far from engineers, but, like, I think they've really got to look at that. You know, his quote was, my gosh, we've got to swing the bat, right? We've got to do something with the tires to make them wear out more at the short tracks. I don't know exactly how you do that. Obviously, it's tough for a Goodyear to want to make a tire that wears so much that there's issues, but they've got to do something, tire, I think, to really allow these short track races to kind of get back to what they used to be, a handful of years ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think one of the unknown factors in all of this, and I think you bring up an excellent point, there's a difference between a streetcar tire that we want to last forever and then the racing tire that we drivers want that tire wear to put the race back into their hands and pit strategy and all of that. But I think the unknown variable in all of this is the weather. I know they used the resin at Bristol. They didn't use the resin at Texas, and we were talking about two different weather situations in both of those cases. So it makes it hard, I think, for Goodyear to come up with what the right package is if you don't know what the weather is going to be. At Texas, I know Texas isn't a short track, but we saw the track get really slick because of the tire wear from the tire at Texas. At Bristol, we saw the tire wear. It didn't slick up the track. For some reason, it ate up the tire, but it didn't make the track slick at all. Normally, we don't see as many marbles as what we saw at Bristol Motor Speedway. And that was one of the things that they were really looking at and saying, we don't know why the tires didn't give that groove that we normally see with tire wear. So it's a tall order that we're giving Goodyear and NASCAR to come up with that tire wear for that package and what they're looking for on these short tracks. And it's going to involve a lot of trial and error and all kinds of things. And the weather is the unknown factor that goes into all of these things. Texas was one of the warmest races that we've had. They didn't use the resin, and the tire slicked up the track and made it very hard to pass because it was so slick. So it's not an easy answer, I will say that. And I think as fans, it's going to require a lot of patience, I think, on our part as they work through what is and isn't going to work for this short track. But I do think they're on the right track with looking at the tire. Anything more you wanted to say there?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered that one pretty good. I think we got some, good comments there from Hamlin and Logano, and work continues, probably not as fast as maybe anyone wants to see it, but hopefully we get kind of something done and see a little bit better racing at the short tracks in the back half of the season, or back two-thirds of the season. I guess we're almost already a third of the way, not quite a third of the way in, but moving quickly.
Yeah, well, just one other thought that I wanted to kind of throw in there real quick is that one thing that we might want to kind of keep in mind, too, is what might work at one track may not work at another track. So that's something else that I think they're going to have to think about when they're putting this package together is the differences between the tracks as well as the weather. So, but I think they're moving in the right direction. We'll see what happens. Is there anything else that is on your mind that maybe isn't on our list, but something you want to bring up as a hot topic?
Nothing I can really think of this week. What about you? I'm trying to think if anything. I don't think so, really. No.
No? Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same vibe here. I can't think of anything new here that we haven't already discussed. But we will be back on Monday. I'm sure we'll have some things to talk about when we come back Monday for our review of the races at Talladega Super Speedway and the ARCA Menards Series races, that ARCA West race that's going to be at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. So I guess we're ready to call it a wrap, Brian. You want to give your sign-off information?
Yeah, Brian Eberle, best way to follow on Twitter, beeberle18. Kicking around the idea of maybe heading out to a local short track on Sunday, heading down to Slinger for the Midwest Tour race. It's supposed to be fairly decent weather. I don't think there's any rain in the forecast. And I usually choose going to a race, any race live, over watching something on TV. And a little bit torn because I don't really want to miss Talladega. It's always a fun race to watch. I don't know if anyone's looked at the Talladega forecast, but it is not looking ideal for racing on Sunday. So I think I'm going to roll the dice and think they're probably either not going to race or race a little bit later on Sunday at Talladega, or I'll just catch up on that via recording later on at night and hopefully head down to Slinger. I got 40 super late models on the entry list already for this weekend. Ty Majeski, Derek Krause from Truck Series are coming to run there. I think it should be a pretty fantastic race and a good kickoff to the Midwest short track racing season.
Yeah, good luck. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say when you get back from watching that race. I will say there's two areas of the country that have been deluged this year with rain, and it has affected racing. And Sal has been telling us how many races on the West Coast have been canceled or rescheduled because of rain. Yeah, just unbelievable that Southern California would be hit so hard with rain. But the southern part of the United States, too, that Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana area, they have been hit really hard as well with rain and with a lot of cancellations and postponements with racing as well. So we'll hope for the best this weekend. But I like your idea, Brian. If we get rescheduled with racing at Talladega this weekend, try to get out to your local short track and take in some racing nearby you where the weather is a little bit better. So definitely looking forward to seeing what happens with the racing all across the country this weekend.
Agreed. Awesome.
All right. I'm Fan for Racing at fanforracing.com, Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio at Facebook. I'll be going out letting folks know that the podcast is available when we conclude our show here today. And like I said, we'll be back on Monday night to do the review of the racing. And Brian, I believe you and I will be back again next Thursday to preview the upcoming races for next weekend. So thanks for being here. We really appreciate you. And enjoy your race weekend, whatever that might entail.
Great. Thank you for having me on. Always a fun time on my Thursdays. And I look forward to doing it again next week. Have a great one, everybody.
Take care.